Hi, and welcome to What's Next in Corporate Real Estate, where I talk to leading industry experts about what got them into real estate, what their job profile and direction has been, and then hopefully we finish up talking about what we think's coming down the pike. And it's really my pleasure today to introduce Lynn Fitzpatrick, who I have known for many years, done a little bit of work with. And she is the first person from outside of England I've had in my studio, comes all the way from Scotland. So Lynn, why don't we start with that and talk a little bit about school and university and how that was for you, and maybe talk about how what made you pick the degree you did and getting into real estate.
Okay. I ended up in property in the absence of anything else that I could come up with to do. At school we had a week where we had to do a week's work experience, and my father was an electrician by trade, so I had an innate interest in buildings, largely because I had pulled cables under the floors in many of the houses that we'd lived in. And there was a board which had lots of different professions you could go and try for a week. Veterinary, no thank you very much. The doctor's surgery or whatever. And then there was Strathclyde Regional Council Estates Department. And I thought, oh, that sounds quite interesting. And, oh, I'm not going to be stuck at a desk. I can be running around a bit. That sounds really good. So that's what we did. I went and signed up for that. Nobody else seemed particularly interested in it. I got driven around by this junior surveyor, chartered surveyor, running around the sort of Strathclyde region, looking at old buildings, what they were going to do. Now, therein lies the flaw in where I am today, because I got dropped off outside of Paisley University. Go in, get a prospectus. It sounds like you really want to do this. So I went and got the prospectus for land economics at the University of Paisley. Now, I'd gone to school in Paisley as well. So I got this, thought, this is fantastic, signed up for the course, blissful ignorance. It's general practice surveying, wasn't building surveying, which if you think I've been running around old buildings that were going to get done up, it was a little bit of flaw in my thinking. But I'm a persistent soul, so I signed up for this degree, got in. It's a sandwich course. I did a week's work experience at there's a Scottish firm called Rydens, so I did a year's work experience up there, and then finished my degree doing land economy, enjoying it, but still coming in a bit discombobulated about the fact that it wasn't necessarily more building than the economics, but nonetheless, we carried on.
Yeah, well, I think that and a couple of the other people I had in my studio have talked about something you just touched on, which is work experience while either at school or university. And you said it was a sandwich course with a year out, or?
Yeah.
So where, and Rydens was for that whole year?
Rydens for that whole year. So we did the first 2 years, the topics of building and economics, law, Scottish law. I've never worked in Scotland. I've lived and worked in England all my professional life. We ran through those for the first 2 years, and then these companies took us in almost like sort of lowly paid interns, but you did get to run around whichever department they thought, it was really whatever department they thought your personality fitted, or they had a gap. So I ended up in an industrial agency, of all things. I wasn't entirely sure how I felt about that at the time.
I'm not sure what that says about your personality.
Shed shifting. It's a perfectly respectable trade. It really, really is. But anyway, but it meant I was out of the office a lot, and I was running around, and I was, you know, honing my skills and measuring up.
And it didn't put you off, so you went back and did your final year?
Final year. And then I was one of those rare people in 94 who took a gap year. 95 even, sorry.
After you'd finished university. Yeah. But that's probably more fun than your career. What did you do in your gap year?
My eldest sister was living in Australia, so I had gone out after... So my work experience year coincided with my 21st birthday. My sister was over in Australia, so I had the request was, just give me money because I'm going to go away for this extended break, and I'm going to save all the money, my princely £6,000 that I earned when I was at Rydens. Went off and went over to Australia for a year, nearly didn't come back to finish my degree, nearly postponed that for a year, but sense dawned on me one morning and I did come back, finished it. But I was, as soon as I found out I passed, I was on a flight within 2 days back to Australia to go for a year touring around.
Of course.
Exactly. Having a high old time.
And maybe that's something we'll come back to when we talk about careers and mid-year or mid-career breaks, because they've become very popular. Didn't exist when I joined the profession, and I sadly have never taken one, although I did take off. I took a gap year before I went to university. So you came back from Australia because you felt you probably needed to start work, but without a job, I take it.
Yes, without a job. And I wasn't entirely convinced I was going to go back into property. Shed shifting, working in... I think it was the office environment. It takes a while to get used to working in an office when you've been at school and when you've been at university. It's downplayed, I think, in the UK... That sort of rigor and responsibility that you get in an office. And the Americans, you know, they have the interns who come in and they do that much more regularly than I've seen in any of the organizations that I worked for. And I can completely understand the value of it, because it was, I found it exhausting. I was 20 years old. I had to be on my best behavior every single day. And not the best behavior if you're in a school, the classroom, or you're whatever. So I came back. I wasn't entirely sure, but completer finisher probably was kicking in the back of my head. And I thought, I've got 1 year towards my RICS accreditation. I only need one more year, and I've got the certificate and I've got the qualification, and it's something to fall back on if I decide I'm not going to do this. So I'm going to finish it. But I also did know that I didn't want to work in Scotland. not that because? I get up to anything outrageous, but Glasgow and Edinburgh are beautiful but small cities. Mm. And I just didn't particularly like the idea of everybody knowing your business. When I was there for the year, everybody knew at the end of the street what you'd done by the time you'd finished doing it. You know, it's cascaded up the street. And it's, as I say, I'm not particularly... I don't do anything outrageous at all, but it's just a thing I have. So I got the Estates Gazette's journal that had all the numbers of absolutely everybody. I annoyed my university no end, because it had been a year since I graduated, but I did a mail merge of letters to go out using the university resources. And I ended up working down, or getting an interview to work for Daniel Watney, so a city-based firm. I jumped on an overnight bus to come down, did the interview, jumped on the bus that afternoon to go straight back up. My parents were holidaying in Australia at the time. They had absolutely no clue, because my father had just retired, so they were blissfully unaware. And when they came back after 6 weeks away in Australia, I said, oh, by the way, I'm moving out. They think, marvellous. Great, we get rid of you at last. Where are you off to? At London. Mm-hmm. What? So, yeah. So that's how... And I came down. And part of the reason I took the job, apart from they just seemed like a lovely bunch, there were about 30 or 35 people there, was to do with the fact that John Harding was a fellow of the RICS and an APC assessor. And I thought, if anything... or anybody can help get me through and coach me in the right way, it's somebody who actually sits the other side of the table.
And again, it's probably, well, not probably, it's very different now for graduates and the whole interview process, which I think is much more involved than certainly when I did it and you did it, involves online tests and everything else. But you clearly were pretty persistent. I mean, you jokingly say you did a mail merge, but... when you were doing it, that wasn't the easiest thing to do. And I remember that list of all the companies and writing to many of them, trying to find myself a job. So what was the key to you getting the job? It was obviously wanting one, but then figuring out who to write to, writing to them. Were you phoning them or waiting for letters back, I guess, in those days?
It was writing letters. And until recently, there was a big pile of... you know, thanks, but we're not looking at them, because you couldn't go in. So the access to information wasn't so readily available. You couldn't go and see, oh, there is a job posted here. It was on a wing and a prayer. Yeah. And a little bit like my decision of, I'm going to go and do that course there. There was these are reasonably reputable companies that I'm going to apply to. I could find out enough about them that it wasn't a one-man band, because I knew I didn't want to work for a very small company. But I also, because I wanted to get the breadth of experience, because with that breadth of experience, you can really understand what it is you're actually good at. Because it does take a while, and all of those bits of the industry, you know, doing a rent review, doing business rates, you didn't go into the building department because that was more a building surveying degree. All of those other bits and pieces, you've got to try and see if they fit you, you know?
Right.
That was the way I felt about it anyway.
And you did that, yeah, and I would agree with you. Doing anything at that age is good experience, and you never know where it's going to come back and be useful. So you did that for a year, qualified?
Yeah, I did that for 18 months. I qualified and then didn't get the pay rise that I was expecting.
that old story,
oh,
yes.
Oh, yes. So within 6 months of qualifying, I had up sticks. Again, I went to another small organisation. And this is where it started to lead me towards corporate real estate a bit. It's a company that doesn't, I don't think it exists anymore, called LSM Partners, but they were, again, similar size, about 30 people. And I joined, I guess you join, you look at people's reputation, but you join about the personality that interviews you. And the interviews were fun. All the interviews I've had have typically just been quite good fun, and I've ended up in places that it's nice people to work with, thankfully. But while I was there, I was in the agency department. So I had been doing office agency ultimately when I was in Daniel Watney. Moved to do national agency, as a small firm can do, national agency. And they had I think the company called Danker, and they had a portfolio of properties that they had to do sort of transaction management on. Wasn't called transaction management then, but that's effectively what it was. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed looking at all the bits and pieces and piecing it together. And I think I was there... I was there about 18 months, and I was worried I was going to get a reputation for jumping every 18 months. But Nelson Bakewell at the time in London had the largest corporate real estate department of anybody, bigger than DTZ's, the Cushmans, anybody. It had 50 people just in that department, and they'd just done this virtual sale and lease back big deal that got them a lot of kudos about what they were doing in the market. And it so happened that they were looking for someone to work in transaction management to look after a portfolio of properties that needed to be sold. Turns out to be the Royal Bank of Scotland, as it was, and then a few others that came along. And I interviewed. I wanted to be in a bigger company. And they just interested me because they were offering that into the corporate real estate world, which was new as far as I was concerned.
You didn't gloss over it, but you make it sound very easy. I wanted another job in a bigger firm, but how did you go about finding that? You read about them. They had this buzz in the market, and you thought, I'd like to go work there. So you picked up the phone.
There was three or four companies that I sort of identified that might do a bigger scale of what it is I'd done. And I actually went through a recruitment agency and just said, look, I'm not looking to jump for anything. This is specifically. Yeah, these are the key words that I need you to have in your search with my name in mind. And as a result, I genuinely can't remember how long it actually took. It could have been 4 months, it could have been six, but wasn't instantaneous. And there was a series of interviews, and I think it was with three or four, actually. Nelson Bakewell was one of the worst ones I had to go through. There was loads of them. None of the testing that happens now, but... But it wasn't the internet. It was an agency that I went through to do it.
And you kind of touch on, it's almost like a history lesson, but quite as you said, corporate real estate as part of the profession didn't really exist when I started. You were interviewing, as you said, Nelson Bakewell was the biggest at it. Which year was that? It was in the...
2001.
Right, so the early 2000s. So, you know, relatively recently in the grand scheme of things. And why do you think that is? Is the corporate real estate, or, and we can come back to this later when we talk about what the future holds, but it's always sort of slightly surprised me that given corporates have so much property, that corporate real estate didn't exist as part of the profession. And maybe it was just, I mean, it wasn't important enough for them, or they didn't realize the value of getting it right and the cost of getting it wrong.
I think you're probably right. It's a really interesting question. And not one I've thought through quite in that format, but chartered surveying, when I was moving into it, had quite a stuffy reputation. You know, I'm afraid to say, chalk striped suits.
Male.
Male. It was known as being stuffy. And not particularly fun, and also the lesser profession. So you've got the lawyers and the accountants, and you've got the doctors, and then there was this, well, you're chartered, but chartered what really?
Yeah.
And I just, so I think there was the view that a chartered surveyor, it follows a silo. You do this or you do this or you do this. And I don't think anybody had looked across, which is what corporate real estate does. Cuts across all of these things. And the people working in companies like I work in now ended up in real estate just by virtue of the fact that they stood still long enough. I'm not necessarily sure. And you will probably know better than me because you've spoken to many more people in the industry in your role, Michael. But I don't know how that developed and how they said they got into their roles maybe 20 years ago, because I genuinely don't think it existed.
No, I don't think it didn't, or if it sort of did by default. And I think it's gradually grown up, and a big movement started in the US when they started outsourcing. And you've been talking about the service side of the industry. And then I think people began to understand how important the cost element was. And maybe the surveying firms, when looking for new business, were talking more and more to occupiers of space, which started with, I've done a brokerage deal for you. I found you office space in London. What else do you have? Oh, I've got something somewhere, you know, else in the country or overseas. How do you help me with that? And of course, the profession wasn't very global.
Yeah.
So if all you could do was a job in the City of London as a firm, then you weren't interested in whether that company had space elsewhere.
And that person looking after that building in London may not have not, I mean, this still staggers me today when I speak to some peers in other companies that say, well, we didn't know we had this bunch of offices. How could you not know?
Yeah.
But in this day and age where we are so connected and bills are being paid somehow and finance watches your every move. So how I could understand perhaps people just didn't know the quantum of what they had, you know? And their colleagues in San Francisco or New York, while they're based in London or Reading or Glasgow, just didn't speak to each other.
Yeah, and I think it's grown up as business has matured and has moved from local P&Ls to regional and global P&Ls, and then people are actually looking across countries and divisions as opposed to letting people do their own thing. So I think it's also business maturity, and the real estate industry has followed that. Back to your career. So still in the service provider side, and I know we're going to come on, and you're one of those interesting people who's done it both sides of the fence, as we say, but just touch on the, if you like, the rest of your service side of, because you moved a couple of times before you went over to the dark side, as we like to call it.
I stepped into the light, so I think. Anyway, Nelson Beck, I was there 5 years, and I had the joy of running a team. So that was my first experience of people management. And it was a very small team, it was two or three, and I basically get paid to laugh every day. We got a lot of work done, but it was good fun. We were a good bunch of people. In
paid
fact,
to
one
laugh.
Of the people who was my boss works here now. Mm. So Dominic Diamond. So he was. So then after that, I. So the story was Nelson Bakewell was about to be bought by the Big Green Machine, and that fell through. But what I'd been sold a little bit in the we're going to be bought by CBRE is, wow, look at the international stuff that they do. And I've always had an international interest, hence going over to Australia for a year and all these kind of things. So I thought, that's fantastic. I could do transaction management or account management, as was developing in the industry. Oh, I could do that with more interesting portfolios because I sort of know, I understand how the UK property industry works. Wonder what it's like in France. I wonder what it's like elsewhere. So when that fell through, I was a little bit upset about that, and interviewed for DTZ, and moved to DTZ. Now, I moved there. This was coincidental, and it wasn't the reason I moved, but actually Dominic Diamond had also moved. So one of the things I was really thinking about before coming here today is connections are key. whether they are they're key in any part of your life, really, aren't they? But because you never know what tidbit of information somebody might be able to give you, or just what door might somebody might be able to open, and do try and keep them well oiled, because you don't want that door to be shut because of an experience of you. So yeah, I was DTZ for about 2 years, and then I moved to CBRE, and I was there for 5 years. Now, when I was there, I was dealing with quite significant portfolios, and the main one that I was dealing with was the Oracle Corporation. And that was really interesting because they had 52 buildings. It was EMEA-wide. I really got to understand, looking at a portfolio, stepping back, understanding a bit more about it. We brought in our consulting team to start doing an analysis when they bought Sun Microsystems. And how they factored in all of these bits and pieces was really interesting, and a real growth stage for me when I was working there, just really learning from the lady that was driving that. But I got massively frustrated working with the corporates, because in a pie chart I was seeing one piece of the pie, and I sometimes couldn't understand why what looked like a really sensible decision from where I was sitting in my piece was vetoed because of something else. And I wanted to understand what else was going on and be part of what else was going on. And sometimes be careful what you wish for.
A whole new learning curve.
Oh, yes.
But that you touched on a couple of things which do come out across these podcasts. One is the importance of a network, and obviously keeping it up, and obviously not burning bridges, but also being involved in the industry and things that touch the industry, so that if you ever do find yourself in a blind alley, or you just need to move for whatever reasons, you can go call on people to help you do that, point you in the right direction, give you advice. And the other thing you just touched on, and you know, you went from doing, if you like, single transactions to multiple transactions. We're curious about geography and doing things overseas, and that's about learning. And then you've just mentioned that again as we move into the next part of your career, this sort of curiosity about what is it that I don't know that's stopping what I think should happen from happening. So that curiosity, I don't know if you can talk about that a bit, but that curiosity and what's going on kind of around what you're doing, to me, has always been something that not everyone has or seems to focus on, but I think is incredibly important.
Yeah.
And in a career, and it could be curious as to why you haven't progressed the way you thought you were, or why you don't understand why a deal's being done by a corporate, even though the real estate numbers stack up in an amazing way.
Yeah, because you never know whether tax is having an input, or there's an M&A coming that they can't tell you about, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I was really very interested in what Oracle did, or whichever company it was, Vodafone, whichever account I was working on, with what they did. Why do they do that? Let's read about them in the press. Let's make sure we've got the Google News alerts coming through about them. Let's try and be ahead of the person sitting in their organization, so you can go and have a non-real estate conversation. You have a business conversation with them. And too often you just get dragged back to property. Yes, that's what we deliver, but we deliver it on behalf of an organization, particularly where my part of the career is, where it's not their core function. So I'm not working for landlords. This is not all about that. It's about, well, they need a box or something to hold the people that do the things that they do. And that's how they make their money. And it's a necessary evil. So what's driving the business drives the necessary evil, and the shape and the form and all of that kind of stuff. And so you need to understand, without understanding one, you can't understand the other, and be a good service provider, because I'm an internal service provider now. That's it. So my client just happens to be the CFO of whichever part of the business it is I'm talking to.
Yeah, and I think it is one of the misses that I've seen at the university level, is you don't get taught about business and all the things you've just said. You get taught about real estate in the context of real estate, not in the context of the bigger picture. And I guess that's what I'm driving at. It seems to me, in everything that I've done and you've done, it's if you look a little bit outside of the direct work that you're doing and are interested and curious about what's going on in a business context, then you have much better conversations about what could be happening, and therefore be able to anticipate. Even if you don't anticipate stuff, it makes more sense to you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just doing a job and not understanding why you're doing it, which to me means you can't do it as well.
You're reacting, you're not strategic, and you're also, because you're not asking those questions early of the business, they're not going to involve you in anything early. So you will just, you're creating a vicious circle.
Mm. So you moved, so talk to me a little bit about that. As you, so you went to DTZ, then you went to CB, and then you moved, as you were beginning to say, you had your pie chart and two-thirds of it was empty, or you didn't understand because you hadn't been involved. So you decided to go and work on the corporate side.
Yeah, and I actually took 18 months, definitely not 18 months, that would have been blissful, 9 months out. So I left I left CBRE and decided, actually, I'm going to gather my thoughts, because I know I really want to do something different, and how do I get there?
And how many years had you been working at this point?
So this was...
roughly, it's like...
2012, so I've been down here since 97.
Okay, so you've been in the mines, as it were, for a long time, and you thought it was sort of time for a break to...
Which was a big leap, because I'm not, come from the background of, you know, if you're not working, you're not pulling your weight financially in a household, that's not great. No, as it happened, I left work and then got proposed to and got married in that 9 month time off. So I don't know what that tells you, but but actually it was really, it was good to have the headspace. And I wondered whether the reason I might not get considered for client side jobs, corporate jobs, was because I didn't have FM experience, because it seemed to be in the conversations I was having, because I'd had a couple of smaller interviews and trying to work it out. And that seemed to be the common thread.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, okay, well, don't necessarily move up, move across, broaden your base of learning again, because FM is something I knew, I experienced. I'm a receiver of facilities management. I didn't really understand the mechanics of delivering it and the complexities of delivering it. And quite frankly, some people today still say I don't, but...
I would never say that.
So I started to look at that angle, and I actually did secure a job working for Serco for 6 weeks, because I'd interviewed at a number of places, MasterCard being one. It didn't look like it was going anywhere particular. So I got this job to be an FM person within, so running a number of sites. I thought, well, that's, you know, not my end goal, but this broadens. Right. And I had been there 6 weeks, and MasterCard said, I would love you to come for another interview. Oh, fantastic. Okay, so I went and did a telepresence who would be a colleague. And I'm thinking, it's fine. What's the worst that can happen? I'll go along. But I'm getting this information. Mm. I'm getting this learning from this company that were great to work for, and great boss that I had there. And then, that's fine. Another interview. Oh, great. What's the worst that can happen? And then they offered me the job. And I was delighted to take it. But I came in when, within my organization, facility management and transactions and projects were two actual separate service lines. So everything reports into finance via our global supply chain, so via the sourcing, and that has many other sister groups under it now. It's got travel and it's got meeting services and all of this, but corporate services effectively into the finance team. So I came in to do transactions and projects from Ireland to India, north to south, in our portfolio with one other person, which, when you think back about it, was actually madness to how you could actually deliver that well with that amount of resources. But we have always operated an outsourced model. So the questions that I had through the interview process was, look, there's an outsourced team that you can lean on. And they basically become your flexible resource to do what you need to do. So, you know, it did, and it does to a degree still make sense.
Yeah, so you manage the outsource provider, which can be daunting, but is, at least there's someone else with theoretically the right expertise to deliver for you. But then you had to sort of learn all the internal stuff that you didn't know.
Stakeholder management, that's the biggest part, should be the biggest part of my job. And what I found most daunting, moving poacher turned gamekeeper, or whatever, which way you want to call it, I used to sit in an organisation where the person who I needed to ask, if I was struggling with someone, somebody doing a very similar job to me was at the desk next to me, or there was somebody I knew would have an it.
Exactly.
And suddenly I'm in a building where when I started at MasterCard, I was the only chartered surveyor. And there's now a few more of us in the team, but I was the only chartered surveyor, because it wasn't deemed to be something that was necessary. You didn't have to have that status. You needed to have real estate experience. And I wasn't used to this external networking thing. The network had always been just readily available for me. Mm. So that was daunting. And that's where things like pushing yourself out there to go to events, to, you know, the wonderful networking breakfasts that you guys host, or the other organizations host, or Cornet, or anything like that, where you can go in and even if you're there for 20 minutes, you'll make some kind of, back to the connections thing, a connection, because sometimes what you need to ask, you can't ask within your own organization. I found that the biggest challenge when I first started. I suddenly felt not lonely by any stretch. There was always somebody I could connect with, but they were never in my time zone.
Right.
One of them was in Central Europe and the rest of them were in the States. So just to get that instant response time, I found really...
And you're interacting with people that you're not. So if you, in the service provider side, as you say, you have your network of experts, but what you don't have experience of is working with, as you say, stakeholders. So you're direct, you know, you're reporting into a CFO who expects things in a certain way, which is the way the company does it.
Yeah.
Or it might be the head of HR. So you're dealing much more with more senior people in a way where they expect you to be telling them everything they need to know, and you don't have a support system in place that trained you to do that.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, you really are jumping into the somewhat unknown and figuring it out as you go.
Yeah, and that, most corporate organizations, I think, will make sure that any new employee, whether you have experience of that industry or don't, there is a lot of online training that you have to do. There's a lot about, you know, what is this company? What is company X does this? And they give you the sort of the dummy's guide to, if you will. And I think most organizations, certainly the one I work for, keeps that going through the time. You know, there's a wealth of information that you can dip into, because organizations are dynamic. And you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm working for a company that in the 6 years that I've been there, there's M&A activity going on all the time. They're changing the directions of the services that they're delivering. So you have to keep on top. And it's difficult. And I am woefully behind on a couple of acquisitions that we've done this year. So I sit on the naughty step a little bit there. But you do just have to keep that learning. Because as you say, Michael, you need to be able to talk that to them. And going into a room with the head of the UK and Ireland, not knowing what the portfolio is, not knowing the total occupancy costs,
and or not knowing his business and how well
his business, yeah,
what the profitability is and where they've got business problems,
mm-hmm,
is also something you need to learn.
Absolutely.
So one of the things you've, and just maybe to sort of move it on, one of the things I'm really interested in, I mean, and we've touched on a number of these things, so I'm going to bring it back to sort of education and lifelong learning, because a lot of this, as you've said, we have all learnt on the job, and we've learnt it on the job partly because the industry's changed a lot. And you learn it on the job because that's how you do a lot of learning in business. There are real estate courses that you can do and qualifications that we've talked about. But it seems to me that the really important things around stakeholder management, around change management, around learning about business, clearly aren't taught when you're doing real estate at university. And unless you go off and do something during that, your career, you only learn it on the job, which is a bit hit and miss. And yeah, you've taken a year out, and everyone's now working longer. So if we just look to the future a little bit, one of the things I'm sort of curious about is how do you get more formal structured learning? Is there anything in the industry that allows you to do that? And I mean outside of pure real estate, in that kind of wider context than that curiosity that you have that says you want to know about other things that impact what you're doing.
I think a lot of people that do very well in have done the MBA or some sort of just a business related course in the and organization, significant organizations, and who I work for is a fairly significant organization. They do afford you the luxury of being able to tap into that kind of thing. So there definitely needs to be some degree of a business element to any course. I don't, as you say, I don't think it does at the moment, but the external learning, the MBAs, I've not done one by any stretch. I am not on the cards. I admire anyone who has the time to make sure that they can do it. I really, really do. And one of my team is actually doing it, but you know, he That's his thing. He craves that in the evening. And you see the difference in the way he's actually dealing with his stakeholders now for doing it. On his performance evaluation is you need to be more proactive in your stakeholder management. And in the last 9 months that he's been doing his course, I see a significant change in the way he works.
And is he doing a day release, or is he? So he's obviously still working. He's doing it at nights, evenings, weekends. Evenings.
And married with a young kid, and he's he's sacrificing 3 nights a week.
Wow.
I know, it's really impressive. But the other thing that I was thinking, when I was coming to see you today, I was thinking about what else do I wish I had learned a little bit more before I got here? Psychology. Because ultimately, while what we do is we deliver a space, or anything to do with the physical world, it's people that occupy it. And the psychology of, again, stakeholder management, but the people who are in a building, because my role moved on to take on FM, and that opened up a whole can of worms to me, because I was a bit of the, well, if you're too cold, put a cardigan on, and if you're too hot, take your cardigan off, so kind of mentality. And thankfully, I have more diplomatic people that work for me than me. But the psychology of the change, and that also then comes with it as you grow a team. So I came in as an individual contributor. I now have a team of direct reports of 6. And the psychology of how seeing what motivates them to make them a high-performing team, because I only succeed if they do, and you become a bit further away from doing the doing, but making sure that everybody, you're clearing out the roadblocks to make them successful, because it makes you successful in the way that goes. So psychology, definitely. And also resilience. I don't know. Resilience, some people have naturally. Some people will learn it and some people will just never get there. But it's, as you said earlier, you were working longer hours. If you're dealing with any organisation that happens to have an American side or an Asia Pacific side that you are working out of time zone, there's demands on you that either you have to respectfully push back on because it's eating into your personal time, or you need to know that you're gonna give on that to take on something else, and you do have to be really resilient. And I see a lot of people fail because they just never know quite when to stop and say no.
Enough's enough.
Yeah,
absolutely. and as you say, when you're working, global time zones, that becomes I've walked out of my front door many times on the phone to Asia and come home at night on the phone to America. I mean, you can do it all day long and all evening long and still not get it all done. So you do need to learn resilience, or the ability to say no and pick what's important.
Yeah.
Because there is now, I think, a huge tendency to include everyone in everything, or lots of people in lots of things, and sort of we all have meetings where we wonder why we've been invited, or we're on it for 5 minutes, but for an hour, but we only have 5 minutes where we're actually contributing. And is that a good use of time? Just back to the learning stuff, and then maybe we'll just move on and wrap this up. But I mean, the thing that I'm sort of been thinking about a lot recently is, there's now a lot of these MOOCs, massive online courses. There's people talk about lifelong learning. We're all going to, I guess, be working for longer, apparently. So you took a mid-year break. You said not to get married, but that seems to be what happened. But I mean, and I know law firms do that, but you talk about psychology and the need to understand business. I mean, is it a question of going back to school to learn that, or can you do it all on the job?
It depends on the best way that you learn as an individual, I think. I've learned it on the job. Whether or not I'm good or not, you'd have to ask other people around me. I wouldn't be able to give you the perfect view. I think, I seem to be doing pretty well, so I must be doing something right. it just depends on how you best... So the gentleman in my team, he learns best in an academic situation. I perhaps enjoy the anecdotal learning that you can get because I like to sit and have a chat with people. So I get a lot from that.
Right.
It definitely does in any real estate, corporate or otherwise course, there does just need to be some element of the wider business world. And this is how a company works. This is how the P&Ls work. This is how buildings impact an organization, be it a landlord's organization, be it developers, be it whatever, just to give at least a high level view of, you know, this is what you're walking into. These are the impacts that you can make. Now, unfortunately, we're a long way off understanding how what I do in my organization can impact the share price. Because I think once we know that, and once you can really define that we've created a workplace that is delivering high-performing individuals in that space because it's just out of this world space, and they are delivering more, the company making more. Therefore, I don't think you'll ever really be able to do it, but that would be the utopia, because then you could really say.
And I think maybe that's a good place to, in a way, to stop, because that's a whole another hours, if not longer, conversation about how the real estate industry moves from kind of doing what it's being asked to do to actually adding value in a way that a business understands. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, we can take cost out, they understand that, but how do we add to the revenue line, as people quite often refer to as the Holy Grail? But that's what I think the next generation of people going into corporate real estate need to be thinking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've nailed how to find buildings, fit them out. There'll be trends around that, but actually what's the value of what we do to the organization, and how can we improve what the business done is kind of critical.
Yeah.
So maybe you and I can find a course and go learn how to do that.
I'd love to. Absolutely love to.
Great. Lynn, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I think it's time we brought this to a close. But thank you very much for coming into our office, and it's been great talking to you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.